Okay.
And Imam said that, no, Al-Yamani yatawali Aliyan. Yamani is one of the lovers of Imam Ali alayhi salam. وَهَذَا يَبْرَأُ مِنْ But this person who has began an uprising in our time is one of the enemies to Imam Ali alayhi salam. So he cannot be the
promised Yamani. Yamani.
This is in Al-Amali, page 661. So when we refer to the narrations mentioned in Shi'i collections of hadith, the conclusion is that for sure Yamani is a virtuous, righteous man. His flag is the flag of guidance, and he invites and calls the people toward guidance and toward Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. The same can be interpreted from Sunni collections of hadith, which talk about the personality of Yamani. For example, in one narration, we read, the Holy Prophet, when he received a group of people from Yemen, the Holy Prophet told about the people of Yemen, قَوْمٌ رَقِيقَةٌ قُلُوبُهُمْ The people of Yemen, they have a very soft heart. Their faith is very firm. وَمِنْهُمُ الْمَنْسُورِ One of them is Al-Mansur, which is one of the titles for Yamani.
Okay.
يَخْرُجَ فِي سَبْعِينَ أَلْفًا He will have a kind of uprising together with 70,000 people. يَنْصُرُ خَلَفِي وَخَلَفَ وَسِيِّ He will help my successor, that is Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and his successor. This is in Al-Ghiba by Nu'mani, page 46, hadith number 1.
Dr. Karimi, thank you so much for providing us the information with all those sources. And I think we would like to discuss more sources in the upcoming sessions.
Inshallah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to the IRIB English Radio.
Football in the media. Over 400 years have passed since the first newspaper was printed in the history of mankind. Now, newspapers have become something very ordinary in our daily lives. Even if we don't buy it, sometimes we stand by the newsstand and take a look at the headlines and the pictures. Every day, over 300 million copies of newspapers are sold throughout the world. Political, cultural, ideological and yellow press and those about the minorities and of course sports newspapers. Who can deny that the largest numbers of issues are for sports newspapers? Seeing a football player's picture and a controversial headline on the front page of a newspaper will tempt anyone to buy a copy of it. It's true, most of the analysis and news items in sports dailies are about football. But the story isn't that simple. Now, there are millions of sites on the internet that are about football news and analysis. From the sites that cover the news about a club or even a player to credible sites that have a half a million visitors every day. Yes, we have to add television and radio programs to all of them. It seems football is the most important event in the world. It doesn't look like anyone or anything can draw the attention of the media as much as football. July 13th, 2014, the biggest failure of legendary Lionel Messi, the unforgettable final match in Brazil. Germans got lucky in injury time.
Philipp Lahm will lift that trophy.
The majestic championship of the disciplined German team. Over 1 billion people were watching the game live, and almost all reputable media in the world had no other schedule other than covering the final match in the World Cup. During those moments, Israel carried out the fifth day of its attacks on Gaza. That day, when all of the media were busy predicting the World Cup champions, the Israeli army shelled 173 locations in the Gaza Strip. They killed 13 Palestinians.
The world's press waiting, as we all are, for the arrival of the two teams.
But the media couldn't stay away from football, and it had a clear reason: money. Football is so attractive that millions of people will sit in front of the TV to watch it. The live coverage, news, the sideline issues, analysis, and even technical charts, they make the job much easier. The money paid for buying a newspaper, the money television stations earn from the advertisement during the halftime, and of course, the money the websites on football earn. The media are economic corporations before anything else. Money directs everything. A news report about a bombing in Pakistan or civil war in Sudan cannot gather even an iota of the audience of a football match. That's why football has turned into the most important preoccupation of the media. Well, at least that's the case during the World Cup games. During the days of the World Cup games are being held, media representatives are everywhere, filming on the sidelines, taking pictures or conducting interviews, reporting the games in many languages on the seats, preparing their reports in media halls, shouting in press conferences, following the players and coaches, filming the fans, or preparing reports about the beauties of the host country. A significant part of what we know as the World Cup is made by the reporters. That's why everyone loves to be seen in the media. Great politicians watch the games and show reactions so they'll be noticed by the media. The spectators put on bizarre appearances so they'll be seen in the media, and the players try to find a place in the frames of the media with their strange faces or behaviors.
Thank
Media are the secret of becoming visible. Becoming visible is a prelude to fame, and fame means wealth and, of course, power. The focus on the World Cup starts from months earlier. We get bombarded by the media for months earlier. Well, to be honest, this is one of the reasons why we care so much about the World Cup. They've told us for months earlier that something really big is going to happen. It's a principle. Before something turns into a hot topic for the media, it has to be dramatized. It has to turn into an interesting story and needs to be elaborated in a way that even its title can draw the audience to the media to follow the news or report. The dramatization has different shapes. Confrontation between Argentina and England a few years after the Falkland War, the clash between Zidane and Materazzi, Maradona's doping, the Boateng brothers playing for two national teams, or even the strike by the French players in the 2010 World Cup. All of these stories were big enough, but the media's heavy focus on them and the explosion of news stories and different analysis turned them into a part of our memory. And we follow the narrative presented by the media about the World Cup, a narrative that has many flaws. When the raging Colombian fans fired bullets at Andre Escobar, no one thought about the role of the biting sports news analysis in Colombia in provoking the assassins. When, in the 1982 World Cup, the German and Austrian players fixed the outcome and walked on the field so Algeria won't move on to the next stage, the world media didn't shed ample light on the issue. When Brazilian workers were standing outside the stadiums while the games were being played and were warning of the high cost of hosting the World Cup, many media censured them. Political interests, radical nationalism, and economic interests will all affect the media coverage of the World Cup. There's no such thing as impartial media. Billions of people who follow the World Cup care about what their favorite teams or players do. They're after excitement, happiness, tears, and joy. They rarely think about the media and about the hidden interests and directions behind the media and how the media makes some things look outstanding and how they remove some other things from the scene. And how they turn it into a show, something that can attract advertisement, something that can be sold, something that can make the players, teams, or a certain country more popular. This is a shocking reality. We don't see the reality of the World Cup. We see the World Cup made by the media. But the story hasn't always been like this. Reporters found out about the miraculous power of the World Cup from the very start. It was a venue where representatives of a country would fight with the representatives of another country. You only had to provoke a little the national sentiments of the people to come to your newspaper to see what the representatives of their proud country have done. In the first World Cups, when the technology wasn't advanced enough to extend television coverage to a large number of people, the newspapers had the prime role in spreading the news. Besides that, radio also existed. Radio in different countries would gather thousands of people. People would listen to the reporters and would use their imagination to see what their champions were doing on the field. The reports and nationalist analysis would go as far as creating a catastrophe.
Good evening. The game you're about to see is the most stupid, appalling, disgusting, and disgraceful exhibition of football possibly in the history of the game. Chile versus Italy. This is the first time the two countries have met. We hope it will be the last.
For example, the newspapers in Chile and Italy before the two teams' games in 1962 launched a smear campaign against the rival team's nation and turned their game into a crazy and violent battle replete with punches, kicks, and red cards.
Well, this looks like turning into a real battle. And what a scene after just 5 minutes play.
Or after the match between Argentina and England in the 1966 World Cup. Alf Ramsey said, "We're not used to training our players to act as animals.
We have strove to produce our best, and this best is not possible until we meet the right type of opposition. That is a team that comes out to play football and not act as animals."
The Argentine newspapers quoted him as saying, "Argentine people are animals." 4 years later in Mexico, South American reporters treated the English coach in the worst possible manner. But it wasn't the only impact of the media on the World Cup. first time television networks implemented the technology to broadcast the World Cup live, they convinced the officials in charge of holding the 1970 World Cup told the competition 12 at noon sharp under scorching heat. The amount of money paid to receive the viewership was so high that it would convince the FIFA officials to ignore the quality of the games. The viewership affected the next World Cup games as well, when the U.S. was granted the right to host the 1994 World Cup, while Brazil and Morocco were more qualified to host the games. Now, football was broadcast live in all countries.
Shoots against the bar. A goal or no? He asks his Russian linesman. And the linesman say yes.
For example, in the 1966 World Cup, people in England would listen to the radio report on suspicious Jeff Hurst goal against Germany or Bobby Charlton's extraordinary goal against Mexico, and would read the report in newspapers and finally could see the video on TV. But nowadays, everyone in the world can see the dribbles by Maradona, or goals by Salvatore Schillaci, or tackles by Lothar Matthäus real time. Sometimes, they can even see things from the future, like the advertisement on Yahoo during the 1944 World Cup, when 99% of the people in the world knew nothing about the internet. The television coverage reached from the first odd cameras to spider cameras and flying cameras. The reporters reached from the telegraph, telephones, and pens to real-time reporting via the internet. The cameras of the photographers also went through major changes, but none of them affected the World Cup as much as the biggest modern media, the internet, and social media. July 13th, 2014, the final match. Over 32 million tweets were posted on social media about the football match. Facebook had over 280 million posts, comments, and likes. The number of news items and pictures on Instagram wasn't any less. It means the end of the 80-year domination of the media on the World Cup. Nowadays, every player, coach, reporter, analyst, referee, or fan is a media on their own. Now, billions of people are simultaneously both the media and the audience. Maybe it's diminished only a part of the powerful visual, print, and internet media. This is behind the scenes of what we see in the World Cup. Based on their tastes and interests, the media show part of the World Cup to us. They take small and big stories out of it, they attract us, they earn money, and passion and excitement by the media have turned football and the World Cup into the most prevalent and influential phenomenon in today's world. This time around, we can watch it a little deeper. Maybe we can see the real picture of the World Cup through the different curtain various media have covered it with. This is called football. Watch it carefully.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In recent years, global warming has become a major environmental problem. Many of us are always faced with news relating to the global warming, and we hear warnings about the worsening situation. As time passes, we will experience the effects of global warming on our lives. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more details. Britain's Met Office predicts next year is forecast to be one of the hottest on record, with global average temperatures forecast to be above 1.2 degrees Celsius, above what they were before humans started to drive climate change. If correct, it will be the 10th year in a row to see global average temperatures reach at least 1 degree Celsius above what they were used to be in pre-industrial times, measured as the period 1850 to 1900. The current hottest year on record, dating back to 1850, is 2016, a year that saw an El Niño climate pattern in the Pacific Ocean, which pushes up global temperatures on top of global warming trends. Professor Adam Scaife, head of long-range predictions at the Met Office, said, "Without a preceding El Niño to boost global temperatures, 2023 may not be a record-breaking year, but with the background increase in global greenhouse gas emissions continuing apace, it is likely that next year will be another notable year in the series." The Met Office's Dr. Nick Dunstan, who has led the 2023 global temperature forecast, said, "The global temperature over the last 3 years has been influenced by the effect of a prolonged La Niña, where cooler than average sea surface temperatures occur in the tropical Pacific." Dr. Nick Dunstan added, "La Niña has a temporary cooling effect on global average temperature. For the next year, our climate model is indicating an end to the 3 consecutive years with La Niña state, with a return to relatively warmer conditions in parts of the tropical Pacific." Dr. Dunstan said, "This shift is likely to lead to global temperatures in 2023 being warmer than 2022. Dr. Douglas Smith, a leading Met Office expert in climate prediction, added, "The fact that global average temperatures are at or above 1 degree Celsius for a decade masks the considerable temperature variation across the world." Dr. Douglas Smith said, some locations such as the Arctic have warmed by several degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times. The Met Office is forecasting a global average temperature of between 1.08 degrees Celsius and 1.32 degrees Celsius above what it was in the second half of the 19th century. Last year, the Met Office predicted 2022's global temperature will be between 0.97 degrees Celsius and 1.21 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, with a central estimate of 1.09 degrees Celsius. Data for the year to October suggests the temperature is about 1.16 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial era. Meanwhile, the Hindustan Times has also reported on the same story. The team coordinated by the United Kingdom's Meteorological Office in their first five-year general outlook said there is a 93% chance that the world will set a record for hottest year by the end of 2026. Teams of meteorologists across the globe predicted the world is creeping closer to the warming threshold international agreements are trying to prevent, with nearly a 50-50 chance that Earth will temporarily hit that temperature mark within the next 5 years. A team of 11 different forecast centers predicted for the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, recently, with human-made climate change continuing, there's a 48% chance that the globe will reach a yearly average temperature of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels of the late 1800s, at least once between now and 2026, a bright red signal in climate change negotiations and climate science. Britain's Met Office senior scientist Leon Hermanson, who coordinated the report, said, "We're going to see continued warming in line with what is expected with climate change. Those forecasts are big-picture global and regional climate predictions on a yearly and seasonal timescale based on long-term averages and state-of-the-art computer simulations. They're different and increasingly accurate weather forecasts that predict how hot or how wet a certain day will be in specific places. But even if the world hits that mark of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times, the globe has already warmed about 1.1 degrees Celsius, or about 2 degrees Fahrenheit, since the late 1800s. That's not quite the same as the global threshold first set by international negotiators in the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. In 2018, a major United Nations science report predicted dramatic and dangerous effects on people and the world if warming exceeds 1.5 degrees Celsius. Several scientists said the global 1.5-degree threshold is about the world being that warm, not for 1 year, but over a 20- or 30-year time period. This is not what the report predicts. Hermanson said meteorologists can only tell if Earth hits that average mark year, maybe a decade or two, after it is actually reached there, because it is a long-term average. Climate scientist Zeke Hofstra of the tech company Stripper and Berkeley Earth, who wasn't part of the forecast team, said the prediction makes sense given how warm the world already is, and an additional tenth of a degree Celsius, nearly 2/10 of a degree Fahrenheit, is expected because human-caused climate change in the next 5 years. And to add, the likelihood of a strong El Nino, the natural period warming of parts of the Pacific Ocean that alter world weather, which could toss another couple of tenths of a degree on top of that temporarily, and the world gets very close to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The English website of Al Jazeera Network has also reported on the same story. A new United Nations report has found that the past 8 years were the 8 hottest ever recorded, indicating the world is now deep into the climate crisis. It said the internationally agreed 1.5 degrees Celsius limit for global heating is now barely within reach. The report by the United Nations World Meteorological Organization, WMO, set out how record high greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are driving sea level and ice melting to new highs and supercharging extreme weather from Pakistan to Puerto Rico. The World Meteorological Organization estimates that the global average temperature in 2022 will be about 1.15 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial average, meaning every year since 2016 has been one of the warmest years on record. For the past 2 years, the natural La Niña climate phenomena has actually kept global temperatures lower than they would otherwise have been. The inevitable switch back to El Niño conditions will see temperatures surge even higher in the future, on top of global heating.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, din al-Arab, ghayr din Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about banking in this episode and the upcoming episodes, hopefully, or inshallah, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before we start our program, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawid, our guest speaker. The topic is some of the Islamic laws related to banking and financial matters, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. Well, Sheikh Tawid, let me ask you this question. You know, if some of the shareholders of the banks we turn to either, you know, deposit your money there, okay, are Muslim or not, is it permissible to receive the interest? Because if you remember last time in the previous episode, I asked you a question regarding, you know, living in the West and you need to work with some banks. So some of the shareholders might be among the people of the book, some of them polytheists. And you said it's permissible to receive interest, is permissible to deposit your money there, you know. But what about, you know, the Muslim shareholders for those banks? If the shareholders of those banks are Muslim, does that make a difference?
Well, His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, says that there is no objection to receiving interest from the shares of non-Muslims, okay, because it is a kind of a joint venture, and there are shares of both Muslims and non-Muslims, so it is permissible to receive interest from the shares of non-Muslims. But when it comes to the shares of Muslims, it's not permissible to receive any interest. And this is what Ayatollah Khamenei says in his fatwa to a similar question, of course. So that is the case. Now let's also consider that if the investment is made in a Muslim country, let's say that the bank is in a Muslim country, again, it doesn't make any difference. The bank is in a Muslim country, but the shareholders are Muslims and non-Muslims. So it is permissible to receive interest from the shares of non-Muslims.
And, you know, Sheikh Javid, what is the Islamic law about taking interest on the money deposited with the banks in the Islamic states, in the Islamic countries?
You're right. It is not permissible if the money is deposited under the title of loan, you know. Loan based on interest, it is not permissible. No loan, usury-based loan is allowed in Islam. And the payment of interest is also forbidden if it is stipulated in the transaction. And of course, depositing money is not allowed based on interest either. So basically, it's absolutely forbidden to receive money which is deposited under the title of loan. Now, for example, whether it is the bank or it is the client, both parties cannot, first of all, make such a stipulation. And if such a stipulation is made by the bank or by the client, let's say the client, you know, the depositor deposits money with the bank, and then he says, okay, I need this percentage of money or interest. This is a kind of, a stipulation. This is explicit, and it's forbidden. But in the event that the depositor does not state anything, now does not mention, does not place a condition for interest, and the bank gives interest or some extra money to the depositor on its own accord and without the depositor requiring the bank to give it, there's no problem. There's no objection to the bank giving interest to the client or to the depositor.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. The topic is financial matters and some of the Islamic laws about banking, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. Sheikh Javid, where or when the bank charges interest on the loans it grants, can one prevent this or circumvent this by, say, buying 1,000 banknotes for cash to be repaid by 12 monthly installments with the surcharge, or by buying from the bank 12 bills of exchange totaling 1,200 for 1,000 in cash, provided that the total of these bills be settled in 12 months?
Well, this is a kind of fallacious transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of transaction, these kinds of transactions that are aimed to bypass or to circumvent usury is not acceptable according to Islam, because it's nothing but a way to escape riba. It's nothing to a way but a way to escape usury. And of course, Ayatollah Khamenei, may Allah grant him long life, says that this is just a fallacious transaction. Uh-huh. It is unacceptable. It is not permissible. And one should not turn to such or resort to such tactics.
I see. Okay. Can the transactions of the banks in the Islamic countries be valid or deemed valid or sound? What is the ruling in the matter of buying property and other things with money received from the banks? What is the view on performing ghusl and prayer in the property? And is it permissible to receive the profits arising from depositing money with these banks?
Now, I just want our audience to, let's assume that there is one such bank in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, there are the Islamic Republic of Iran, and there are banks working, operating inside Iran, and there is law, there is regulation passed by the Islamic Consultative Assembly. So the banks are acting and operating in accordance with the laws passed by the Islamic Consultative Assembly. So The transactions carried out by the banks in accordance with these laws, of course, are valid, and they are because they are also at the end sanctioned by the council for safeguarding the constitution, because there is another institution which is which actually sanctions, which endorses the laws passed by the Islamic Consultative Assembly. So they are, such transactions are valid, of course. The owners of the capital can have any profit arising from the investing or from the investment of the capital in accordance with any proper Islamic contract. Of course, they can take possession, they can own it. And taking the loan from the banks to buy a property or other things should be without a problem, provided that, of course, it is done in accordance with one of the contracts we talked about a while ago. We talked about that. We did say that if the transaction is carried out based on partnership or on rent or on Ju'ala contract, then of course it is permissible, and the loan contract is permissible in this case, provided that such a partnership or such a transaction is included, and it is based on those kinds of transactions and legal methods.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Shabit, and thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. The topic that we tried to touch on was some of the Islamic laws related to financial matters and banking according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, of course, we haven't finished all of these questions, and the answers kindly given to us or replied by Sheikh Javid. So in the upcoming episodes, inshallah, we'll continue some of the other questions related to banking. And we bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Maljab ilaha illahum Ghaffarun سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي المميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Satellite operator Eutelsat suspends the services to the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting days after it took Press TV off the air.